Welcome to Investigating Angel, an Angel rewatch podcast where we analyze each episode of Angel the series with no spoilers. We are your hosts, Leia
and Sarah,
and if you love Angel, this is the podcast for you.
Guys, welcome back to Investigating Angel. Today we are talking about season one, episode nine, Hero. Man, they really are just kind of hammering home this is a very intense and dark show, and we're willing to go dark places that Buffy isn't willing to go with having I Will Remember You and then Hero back to back.
Pain and then more pain.
You're like, oh my gosh, wow, that was heartbreaking. Okay, back to, you know, our regularly scheduled programming. And then it's like this one, it's a lot. But before we talk about the heartbreak that is to come, we have a special guest with us. And Leia, would you like to introduce her?
Yes, I would, actually. So we have my best friend, Megan. She is here to talk about this episode. And the reason she is here to talk about this particular episode is because she's been doing a rewatch, and when she watched Hero, she sent me a full-on crying video.
You're like, yes.
Telling me how devastated she was that Doyle passed away, RIP. So, of course, it was only natural that she would come on for this one. Anyway, Megan, do you have anything to say?
I feel personally attacked by that intro, but I'll take it. Yeah, I did full-on Sunday sobbing video, puffy face, like not a cute cry whatsoever. It's emotional damage for sure.
That makes you instantly
emotional
relatable.
Damage.
We all know exactly how you felt because, you know, that's why we're here. We love and we hate the emotional damage the show gives us, you know?
Yeah, sometimes it's cathartic. Sometimes I have to go sit in a dark room for several hours afterwards, you know? It's real hit and miss.
And sometimes you have to put off finishing watching the series because it's a little much.
Sometimes that's what certain people have to do. Yeah.
All right. So, Megan, tell us a little bit about how you came to discover Buffy and Angel. I'm assuming through Leia.
So when I was younger, kind of towards like the tail end of Buffy, I was watching it because obviously I was like quite young when the episodes were kind of initially coming out. And I got into it. I was always kind of into sort of like fantasy, supernatural type stuff. I mean, one of the first books I read was The Hobbit. So that kind of sparked that interest for me. So that's kind of been the genre I've been into my whole life. And then when Leia and I met in high school, it was just, I don't know if you want to say downhill or uphill from there, because we used to have regular sleepovers just binge watching Buffy and Angel and eating a million snacks. So that's kind of the foundation of our beautiful friendship. I don't know.
That's so cute.
It really is.
I love it.
It really, really is.
I love it. Oh, that's awesome. That makes me so excited because I feel like growing up, I didn't have anybody that liked Buffy and Angel. So I feel like I'm just now starting to discover people. Oh, hey, you like my stuff too? And so having like those relationships where you can kind of bond over the show, I feel like is just, it's really special and unique. And that's something that we're finding on the podcast. But I love that you guys have had that for several years now. So that's really cool.
Yeah, we get to share in the tears together. It's a beautiful experience.
All right. Well, let's jump in. So this episode was written by Howard Gordon and Tim Minear, which is interesting because I didn't know Tim had such a heavy hand in this episode as well. So like, I don't know. I wonder if it was this episode or the previous one that he was asked to revise last minute, because I know we were kind of like trying to figure out which episode
it was. I
think
it was Sense and Sensitivity that you said. Yeah.
Okay. I wouldn't be surprised if this one he was also brought in simply because the decision to have Glenn Quinn exit might have been one that was like, okay, it's going to be this episode.
But this episode is like so tight. I just can't even imagine like it's, I don't know, I just feel like it's so, it's such a good episode, whereas like last episode seems like it was just put together almost. So I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. And we'll talk about it in a second, but I actually don't think the episode is that tight.
No, I know. I'm going to be like, Sarah, the outlier. No. I know. I know.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Well, I mean, that's okay. That's okay. We can discuss. Maybe it's because I literally just watched it like right before we started, like we got here.
So there's still that emotional attachment. Still,
yeah. Like, yeah. It was just a really enjoyable like episode for me. So maybe like in my head, I think it's tight, but I don't know. We'll talk. We'll talk about it.
Yeah. We'll talk about it. You're like, holding on to it. You're like, I don't want to have the blinders come off.
I know, me neither. We all know how I feel about this episode. So I'm interested to see what you have to say now.
You can say that it is, like, there's different definitions for what makes a good episode, right? You can say, does it hit emotionally? Does it hit what it needs to hit? Is it tight when it comes to the story outside of the one that's emotionally impacting it? How are its themes? Like, there's multiple different like things that can go in on that. Like we agreed when we talked about Sense and Sensitivity, that episode is like got some pretty big flaws, but it's a fun episode. And so you can still like an episode and appreciate the humor in it while maybe criticizing other things. So I think that there are episodes, I'm just going to point back to Passion on Buffy, where I feel like everything in that episode works. You know what I mean?
That episode is perfect.
It is perfect. It really
is. Perfect episode.
Yep. And so I think like an episode like this, you can say, hey, it did what it needed to do for the story and maybe even brought me emotionally where I was supposed to go. But you can even like say, like there's some weaknesses and stuff too. So anyway, all right, we'll get there.
I want to hear what the weaknesses are because I don't think there are any. And good. Well, the hill I'm going to die on today, Sarah.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah,
please.
I'm ready for the debate also. I'm ready to hear your side.
Megan's prepared to sit firmly in the middle of the road and be pulled between Leia and I.
My listening ears are open, ladies.
Okay, good. Well, I feel like we're like judge and jury here. We need to sway Megan to our side.
She's my
best
friend.
That is the goal.
Okay,
all right. It's a losing side for me. I get it. I understand, but I will try. I will try my hardest.
Sarah's pretty persuasive, though. I think. Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, I've been listening to the podcast, so yeah, I'm interested to see.
I sound like I know what I'm talking about, but I really am pulling a lot of stuff out of my butt.
No, you are not, Sarah. Don't say that.
Leia's my biggest cheerleader.
I am.
That's why I asked you to be my co-host. I was like, I need someone to sit there and be like, yes, Sarah, everything that you say, every word out of your mouth.
This is an echo chamber. This is not.
We don't think critically at all here.
There's no critical thinking. We just bounce off of each other.
Unashamed. Angel is beautiful. He's so pretty. Angel's
great.
Yeah,
we're just like Angel.
And I feel like we all agree that, you know, we agree on most of the lines, I think, so far. Most of the big debates I've noticed. So that's always good, too.
It has only been 8 episodes, but, you know, everything so far, we're on. All right, back to the episode. It was directed by Tucker Gates, aired November 30th, 1999. All right, so Joss Whedon. Yes, Doyle is dead. We killed him. Sorry about that. Thanks, Joss. When this episode first came out, Leia's flipping off the camera here. When the episode first came out, the public statement that was issued and what the network was telling everybody was that Doyle was never going to be a long-term character, and Glenn Quinn knew that going into the role. However, Tim Minear set the record straight on a Redemption Cast podcast episode. He said that the story about Quinn knowing his character would be short-lived was the diplomatic version that they put out at the time. In fact, Quinn was given the opportunity to get his substance problems under control, but when he unfortunately could not, they had to let him go in order to protect both the show and the actor himself. This gave Joss the opportunity to remove a leading character early on in a show's run, which is apparently something he was actually wanting to do for some time. I know there were like at least 2 things that Joss really wanted to do was kill off a main character very early on. I know that's what he wanted to do with Jesse on Buffy. And that's why they wanted to have Jesse like be a part of the main, I think it's Eric Balfour is the, or I forget the actor's name. Is it Eric? Do you guys know?
I think so.
That sounds right. That. Yeah.
But anyway, he wanted the character or the actor who played Jesse to have his name in the title credits for Welcome to the Hellmouth and for The Harvest. Is it Eric Balfour?
Oh, yeah.
Look at that.
Look at you, sister.
Mind like a steel trap.
I mean, this counteracts what you were saying earlier. You are prepared, girl.
Sarah talks so much shit about her own self, and it's just like unjustified every single time. Just
okay.
Like, what are you saying?
You know my sisters. Do you hear the crap they talk about me all the time? I think I've internalized a little bit. I'm a little hurt, guys. No, just kidding.
Yeah, I don't have sisters. I just have Leia to talk crap about me. So
yeah, basically a sister. No, they're like the mean girls in my life. Anyway, all right, sorry. Okay, Eric Balfour. Yes. So I know that Joss really wanted to have him be a main character and then have it be like, oh my gosh, he dies within the first or second episode. And that's something that obviously couldn't happen because of budget reasons. So Joss was able to get one half of that in having Doyle die in this episode, and then he'll get the other half later on in Buffy. David Greenwalt said that they started planning Doyle's death in episode 2, which was really interesting. Wow. I did not even know that. And that's the episode where they changed the script from Corrupt to Lonely Heart, which is so interesting because so much crap went down with that script. Could you imagine them also realizing, hey, things may not work out with one of our main characters? Like, not only do we have to redo this script, but we actually have to start making a way to possibly have Doyle leave the show. Exit. I mean,
that early in, that's crazy.
I just sometimes, like, the more that I learn about how Angel started, the more shocked I am that the show took off and did as well as it did.
Yeah,
because
honestly just a
so
mess.
Much stuff. It really was, honestly.
I feel like I have a much greater appreciation, I guess, this rewatch for, like, these two episodes. Or even, like I said when we recorded The Bachelor Party, I feel like Bachelor Party, I Will Remember You, and Hero, it's, like, a really great, like, trilogy. And I think the show, mm-hmm. like, really, like, there's mm-hmm. This is a turning point for the show in, like, a major way. Like, these were three great episodes back to back.
Yeah, I think they really had people, like, start to really feel something. And that's what got people really hooked, too.
Yes, mm-hmm. I agree. 100%. So David Greenwalt says, when it came to Doyle, we did something pretty outrageous in this business. By then, I talked to Stephen Bocho, who was training me that you never suffer a misbehaving actor. I was determined that I was not going to take any shit from any actor under any condition because life is too short. We loved Glenn. He auditioned and was great. The three of them, David, Charisma, and Glenn, made a great cast for the show. I didn't know until later the full extent of Glenn's problems, but what I experienced on the show is he would have trouble remembering his lines. I don't recall him showing up late so much as screwing around on the set and laughing. Look, I totally support actors laughing and talking right up until the call of action, except when they're laughing at their performance and their lack of professionalism. I took him into my little motor home. We were in downtown LA, and let's say this was around episode 4 or 5. I said to him, look me in the eye. I am a serial killer. You're going to die. You may not come to my set not knowing your lines. You may not come to my set and laugh over not knowing your lines. A lot of these people are driving a long way here to work, and they have 18 hour days. They work very, very hard for a hell of a lot less money than you're making, and I will not stand for it. Do you understand me? And he began to cry. So I assumed he understood me, but then, of course, absolutely nothing changed, and we ended up killing him heroically in episode 9. But think about it. We've got a 12 episode order, and to kill one of the three main characters 9 episodes in, it just creates the feeling of, watch out, folks, anything can happen. It was a bold move, but I was pretty adamant that I was not going to spend my life dealing with that kind of crap. Yikes. I mean, good for him, honestly, though.
Yeah, that's really heavy.
I feel like that's a totally fair reaction.
And isn't it also, there's like quotes saying that they also didn't want David and Charisma to get sucked into that, like to be influenced, which is, that's really sad because they were all really close.
They were really, really close. Like, Charisma is really diplomatic in her quotes. Like, she talks about, like, working with Glenn and David, it was impossible to get any work done because they were so rowdy and really bonded early on and were total boys. It was really precious to reflect on. But working with Glenn was so much fun. And she compares Glenn to working with Nicholas Brendan over on Buffy and kind of infers that Nicholas Brendan was
had his own demons and stuff that he was wrestling with, and saying how like they were insanely talented people, and when they were on, but it was really hard to get them to that place, and it ended up just really like their personal life was affecting their work life. And she says he got, talking about Glenn, she says he got in his own way with other stuff. He had some demons. It's a weird industry, especially when you have extreme talent and some trauma in your life. And it can be really challenging to reconcile all that money and adulation and work demand. How do I have a personal life? How do I work 19 hours a day? How do I balance all that stuff? And you're so young, so it's a lot. And she talks about how she views Glenn like it, as a brother. There was a lot of affection there. And she says the chemistry between David and Glenn was really, really good. Tim Minear talks about how he thought Glenn was great. He was charismatic. Talks again about how David and him were like really good friends. And then I think there's even a quote in here from Christian Kane, who plays, I don't even know if we know his name yet, but one of the lawyers from Wolfram and Hart, talks about how him and David Boreanaz would pick Glenn Quinn up, and they would go out and they would kind of talk about these things. And David Boreanaz really has not said very much about it up until this. Even now, he won't really talk very much about it. He says, Glenn is a tough thing to discuss because he was such a good friend of mine. I kind of keep that unanswered. It's still tough to talk about, but God bless his soul. It was a big learning experience for me working with someone of his talent, which is really sweet.
Yeah. He still, every year, he'll like share like a picture of Glenn Quinn on the anniversary of his death, like on Instagram.
They were really close.
They were very close, it seemed. Yeah. Which is, that's so sad.
It is just absolutely tragic. And I think it's tragic on multiple levels. I mean, first and foremost, Glenn Quinn ended up passing away on December 3rd, 2002 at the age of 32. So I think it was only about 3 or 4 years after this episode would have aired. And I think from the story perspective, it's so heartbreaking because I feel like there's so much more they could have gone with Doyle. I feel like his arc got – it was a nice arc. I feel like they did a really, really good job of giving him a really wonderful send-off. And some characters don't even get that.
Yeah.
But it also is a shame because I feel like there was so much more – so much unanswered. But I also think the show did a good job of recognizing that between like particularly him and Cordelia and just like we'll never know, you know? And I think that's part of the heartbreak. On the positive side of things, though, I would say that Doyle's death was probably the single most important thing for the show. And it really set the show, and I think, Megan, you mentioned this before, I think it set the show on a new trajectory. I think it raised the stakes to incredible heights, and I think the show often lived up to those stakes up until the very end. It set the tone for the show in a lot of ways, because I really think from here on out, the tone of the show changes drastically. And I think that they were trying to go for a more grittier, darker theme with the with Angel versus Buffy, and they weren't quite succeeding until this episode. And I think from here on out, it kind of went places that even Buffy didn't go in future episodes.
It's almost like this Doyle's death was to Angel what the Angela storyline was to Buffy.
Agreed.
It kind of took it to that like new level of like, you're just so invested after this point. At least I am. I don't know about you guys.
No, I agree.
Yeah, it was like the catalyst for those characters like maintaining that promise to do what they had said they were going to do. That's what was like always in the back of their minds, I think. And like you said, it completely changed almost kind of like the seriousness of how they moved forward in the episodes that came after.
Yes.
All right, so all of the reviews that I read were pretty harsh on the episode. I feel like, Leia, they're always opposite.
What is wrong with people? Literally every episode we have reviewed, people are like, this episode sucks.
I thought it was rated like one of the 10 best like episodes of Angel ever.
It
like,
is, that's yes. What I had
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Weird. All right.
What did they say?
All right, so Critically Touched said, the episode, ignoring the shoddy racial issues, is about heroes, our images of heroes, and the societal preconceptions of what one should look like and act like. If we're putting Superman up as a standard, then Doyle is far from par. Even compared to Angel, a former serial killer, he pales and he knows it. They go on to talk about how they felt like
the weakest part, and Passion of the Nerd also, they think this episode is tacky and claustrophobic.
let me finish. I'm getting looks.
Tacky?
And the reason why it's tacky is because of the Nazi symbolism. And I kind of don't disagree.
I wouldn't say tacky.
Yeah, I don't know that tacky is the right word, but I understand what he's kind of going for. He says, as the gravity and scope of the episode doesn't work and comes off heavy-handed. So it's like this idea of like, we have the scourge coming to kill all demons or all half demons and stuff. And then but what he means by claustrophobic is you have the scourge coming through the streets, but they're empty streets. So he's like, where is everybody? So you have ginormous Los Angeles is suddenly squished down to these like three streets where there's nobody there. And so it lends itself to being like, instead of it feeling like a full world, all of a sudden it feels like we went to this tiny, tiny town instead of it being it happening in Los Angeles. He says it suffers from the same thing that I Will Remember You suffers from, and that the plot feels contrived, but the emotional weight of what happens in both shines past the flaws. So we talked about in I Will Remember You, there's some pretty big like contrivances where you have like this monster jumps in, literally jumps into Angel's office,
right,
and he has the blood that can change Angel. And we're like, whoa, like what are the odds? Which is very, very clearly contrived, but we don't care because it's not the point of the episode, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't know why that's like, that's not an issue for me with these last two episodes, because it gets us to where we need to be. And I didn't need like four episodes to find out who the Scourge was or what they were trying to do. Like, I didn't need all of that. Like,
right.
It was all, for me at least, it was explained sufficiently, and it did what it was supposed to do in this one episode. Just like in I Will Remember You, the more a demon like fulfilled its purpose of getting Angel to become human so that we could have that emotional like resonance. So I don't know that that's like, I don't know, it's not like a criticism for me. It's true. Yeah. Like I'm not gonna say it's not true that there are contrivances, but they're not, it's not like a bad thing in my
opinion. It's not a deal breaker for you.
No. Yeah. No.
For sure. Yeah, I feel very mixed because I feel like the themes and the emotional weight of the episode, the music too was fantastic. Christoph Beck like worked his little butt off.
Good. Oh, it was like movie music.
Yeah. It was from the beginning of the episode, you're like, "Oh, something big's going to happen." Like you could just tell. There was like a sense of weight that like was the undertone of the entire episode that it wasn't there in previous episodes. And I really liked that.
Yeah, absolutely. And like Leia, you were even talking about like the camera angles earlier and stuff. So I think that just the combination of that made it more cinematic than other episodes.
Yes, it's very, very cinematic. I agree. That's a great word to describe it. And honestly, it felt like a movie.
Yeah.
The whole episode, like 42 minutes, it felt like an actual movie, not an episode of TV to me. And I think that's why I liked it so much, because I felt like from start to finish, like, it started somewhere and it ended somewhere, and I like how we got there. It wasn't just like you said, there's contrivances and stuff, but there was a beginning and an end, and it all made sense all the way through. So, yeah.
Yeah, so his review is tacky, in my opinion.
Shots fired. I think the weakest part of this episode for me is for sure like the Scourge and that whole aspect of it. I think there are a few instances where like I forget the young teenage boy, like where he decides to run away. And I feel like there's a few instances that it's very clear that they set it up so that Doyle could have these moments to talk and stuff. So that kind of pulls me out a little bit. But I do think that the payoff of Doyle in the end makes it so much worth – like it makes it worth it. Yeah, and I have a few other things, but we'll talk about it when we come up to it, because this is turning into the longest introduction ever. all right, so the opener is just one big bummer. It's like, this is what happened previously, and I Will Remember You. And, oh, okay, here's all the ways that, like, reminders of all the things that Doyle's done and the path that he's been on, and, like, knowing that he's going to die is just sucks. This intro here of, like, Cordelia's voiceover and her idea of the shoot and everything – I think was taken from the corrupt script.
Yeah, I was going to say that. It was like repurposed. I remember like reading this part. Yep.
Yep.
So, okay, did you guys notice that the silhouette of, I say in quotations, Angel is very clearly stunt double. Not David Boreanaz?
It's Mike Mossa. Is that not his stunt
double? I don't know his stunt double's name, yeah. But I was dying.
I haven't noticed that. No way.
Girl,
I was like,
go
that
back.
Is not David Boreanaz. Come on.
His hair doesn't stick up. His shoulders are not as broad. He's too short. Like, come on. You think we don't know what David Boreanaz looks like? Please. I can spot that man in a dark alley. I can pick him out of a lineup. Like, I know.
I'm like embarrassed I didn't notice now. That's really embarrassing.
I might have to
put myself through the torture of rewatching the episode as punishment. I don't know.
Just watch like the first opener and see, and you'll be like, oh, this is not David Boreanaz. Okay, no. But the funny thing was is I was like, oh, this is stupid. Did they think we're stupid? Like, come on, it's not David Boreanaz. And then I read the script and it says Angel, framed in an alleyway, lit dramatically, heroically, his long coat waving cape-like in the sudden night wind, waving and wind optional. And then in parentheses, it says, production note, for artistic and budgetary reasons, this is Angel's double, so silhouetted that we cannot tell. So intentionally, they put budget Angel in there because they're trying to show how Cordelia is cutting the budget. She can't
Of course that was intentional. Money. Of course that was intentional. Oh my God.
And it what gave it away too is when it cuts to David Boreanaz's face when he says, what does he say, you can count on me or whatever. It's a really bad cut. It's a really bad cut to make it obvious that that's not him. Okay, now this is him. Oh, it was so funny. It was great. Oh my God. I loved it. The dude is so tiny compared to David Boreanaz.
So
it's not even him. It says, deftly, Angel's silhouetted double kicks the knife out of the stunned thug's hand. I love how it's Angel's silhouetted double. So the script is very self-aware. It's very funny. All right, so we finish Cordelia's voiceover, and now it is Angel sitting and squinting at Cordelia in the office as she's holding this video camera, and she's like, dude, you're the Dark Avenger. This will be great. Like, we'll get more money. It's going to be perfect. Now she's like, blah, 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 blah. Angel's just like walks out of the room without saying anything.
No.
Like, why am I in here when I could be brooding by myself? So Cordelia says, look, I know a little something about self-promotion, Angel, and I'm telling you one commercial like that could help get us out of the red, or is it the black? Whichever one means we're broke, that's us. And then Angel enters the elevator and he goes downstairs and he looks so sad as he's going down. Like, my heart almost
broke. So I have a question. Do we know how much time has passed between I Will Remember You and this?
No.
I don't think they mention it.
No. I don't think they do. But it can't be more than like a week or so, don't you think?
Yeah.
Because I feel like if they had had any other clients, they probably would have showed them. So maybe like a couple days or something. But Cordelia says, so what? Buffy blows into town and puts you in a permanent funk and I'm supposed to stand around and watch our business go belly up? Okay. So,
she doesn't know.
She is annoying in this episode. Well, in the first half of the episode. She doesn't know. I'll give her the benefit of the doubt for that. Yeah. But what makes me really frustrated is she finds out, and I forgot that she finds out in this episode. I wish it would have done a lot for me if she had gone to Angel and said, hey, like, I need to apologize for getting so hard. I mean, I know that she isn't going to do that, but it would have been like really nice.
She would have never done that. Yeah.
But then she's even still kind of blaming him a little bit, even after she finds out.
Yeah. It's just, I feel like this, at least the beginning of this episode or the majority, it's just, I'm just kind of getting tired of the Cordelia's one track mind being money, 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 money. Like, we need more money. And I get why, like, they're still doing this, but it's just, I just feel like it's getting a little old at this point. Like, I don't want to hear Cordelia talk about how they need more clients so she can have more money when there's like, obviously she doesn't know a lot of the stuff that's happened. So this is just Cordelia in her own little bubble. But like, that's the problem. Like,
yeah,
Cordelia is still in her own little bubble, just very self-involved, very like, money, 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 money. Give me more money.
I think it's really, really apparent how little character development they're giving her right now, because you have Angel over here who's literally giving up everything he's ever wanted
for the sake of the world. And then you have Doyle, who dies so that Angel can continue saving the world ultimately. And Cordelia's still griping about money and people noticing her shoes and stuff. And so it just, it's a little frustrating because we're like, everyone's getting character development except for Cordelia. Everyone's getting pushed forward. So yeah, I don't know. I kind of wish they were doing more.
Yeah. And it's like, I get it. Like, it's, we're 9 episodes in, so there's still like so much time for character development. I guess my frustration is that it's just been the same thing where it's just like, you know, in Lonely Heart, it was, oh, we need to get more clients so we can make more money. And then yeah, every episode after that, it's like, are you going to charge this client? Or like, we need to find paying clients. And like, we need to do this. And it's like, I don't know. It's just getting a bit repetitive at this point.
Sure.
Where it's like, let's move. I don't want to talk about this anymore.
It's almost like it's like very like one layer to the character. Like you said, there's not a, like a lot of like depth to her in those episodes. And like, but I almost wonder if it's like they were almost trying to annoy us with that repetitiveness so that when she does start to change, it's like super apparent and like we're all kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And that could be the thing where it's like they're trying to, you know, for the viewers that haven't maybe watched Buffy, they're trying to like really establish what kind of character Cordelia is.
Yeah, I think that's it.
In order to, you know, I mean, next episode is like huge for her. Not to like have any spoilers, but like maybe that's what it was. But I guess upon like rewatch, it's just a little bit annoying at this point. 9 episodes in, I'm just like, I'm over this. Like, we get it. Nobody else cares about money but you, Cordelia. Like, there's more important things.
Yeah, there's so many other big things happening right now. So it feels a little like shallow. I mean, not that we, I think everyone agrees that Cordelia can be somewhat shallow. But you know, that's kind of one of her defining characteristics at this point, other than being self-absorbed, is shallow. But this is something that someone had brought up, a couple people actually brought up to us after our review of Room with a View. And they were saying that Angel is its own show. And so even though it is a spinoff of Buffy, the writers were most likely trying to hammer home Cordelia's defining characteristics and traits for those who are new to the show, so that when there is character development, I think it's just frustrating for those of us who've watched her for 3 seasons already. Because it's like, okay, there was character development that we feel like you're completely ignoring at this point. So
So
Doyle returns, and I'm going to miss Doyle sticking up for Angel constantly when it comes to Cordelia putting him down. He says, he's not entirely wrong, you know. I'm just saying advertising a superhero who can't really go out in the daylight might raise vampire suspicions. Cordelia suddenly gets the idea that Doyle would be the right person because he's more of the everyman. And Doyle's like, I know I'm not comfortable in front of the camera. And she's like, oh, let's see if we can like get you some cheekbones. And like, I was like, okay, who are we fooling here? Glenn Quinn is a very attractive man. He has cheekbones. It's always really funny when they try to like play off that these guys are like the homeliest, nerdiest, weird. Like, okay, have you seen some nerds? Henry Cavill, I know we've already talked about him on the podcast before. Henry Cavill is a self-acclaimed nerd.
Woo! Like,
Henry.
Okay, but honestly, I think Henry had like a glow up though. Like, I want to see what he looked like in like high school.
Okay, watch what's the movie that he was in high school? It was I can't remember now. The Count of Monte Cristo. Watch The Count of Monte Cristo. He plays the son in that, and he's like 16.
He was cute in that. I know that might be a little weird to say, but I'm like
He's a full grown man now, like whatever.
Yeah, I'm saying in reference to how he looks now, like it's not like there's like a massive like,
no, like you can, you look at him and you're like, oh, he's a cute 16 year old, but you're also like, he's gonna be an attractive man one day. Like, you can tell, like it's not like we're rewatching the Harry Potter series, and who's the guy that plays Neville?
Neville,
that guy.
Matthew Lewis had a glow up. Okay, we were literally just talking about this. Yeah, Matthew Lewis had a glow up.
We watched
We did too.
What did we watch? No, we watched Goblet of Fire and Deathly Hallows Part 2, and like his glow up from that movie to that movie was like, woo,
0 to 100. Yes. He didn't walk. He sprinted to that glow up.
Yeah,
between those two.
Yeah, which R.I.P. Hagrid. We just watched Chamber of Secrets, and they brought Hagrid back, and everybody was crying and holding on to him. And I was like, this is just really hard right now.
Oh, Seriously. Yeah.
Anyway, okay. On to happier things. Let's go back to the episode.
A lot of death this episode.
This is so heavy.
Okay. So later on, we have Doyle sitting there trying to re-record, or I guess it is re-recording. He's trying to record with Cordelia. He looks completely stiff, completely unnatural. If you need help, our rats are low. And Cordelia has like his lines on the window behind her so he can read them. And you can very clearly see his eyes like jumping back and forth from the camera to her. Like he's so nervous, not a natural at all. So they finish. He says, is that it? Are we done? Which I do got to say, I think that is beautiful. I love how they paralleled that at the beginning, the end, and how something that is kind of meant to be like, oh, look, he's uncomfortable. Like, this isn't really who he is. And then it goes to show at the end of the episode, no, that actually is.
Yeah.
That is who he is. Yeah. Ugh. So Cordelia is really discouraged. And she says that Doyle has something that she calls the weasel factor, and he looks pretty hurt by that, which, I mean, yeah, who wants to be referred to as a weasel? But I do want to say I do appreciate, and I was pleasantly surprised that Cordelia did authentically apologize.
Yeah. She also said that Angel doesn't have a heart, so how can it be so broken?
Like, I was about to say, the back half was not great.
Which is a very interesting choice of words, simply because like Buffy in the last episode was talking about how she heard his heart beating and like how he was actually human. So I like the little callbacks to the last episode. So Doyle agrees to go talk with Angel. And then we have this really, really good conversation between the two of them. I'm sad to say that in the script, Angel was supposed to be shirtless or wearing a tank top in this episode or in the scene. And they decided to have him like fully clothed. And I don't know why.
I don't like that.
That's just like disrespectful, honestly.
I think so. Yes. I was a little bummed. But maybe they do know us really well and they know that we would not be focusing on anything that Angel would be saying. So like maybe it was for our own good. Like we
They could have put him in like a little black like wife beater or something.
I find that almost more distracting, honestly, because then it just accentuates his arms. Nice.
That one is real, real nice.
Yeah.
What's that one photo you've sent me like every year for the past, I don't know how many years, Liam, him in like the bathtub?
Wait, what photo is this?
Oh, God, yes. The Ruben Boreanaz one?
It's like an anniversary event for us almost when she like resends me that photo.
I think photo. I know exactly which one you're talking about.
He's in the bathtub and he's got like a beard and stuff.
Thinking back, I think that might have really been an awakening for me as a young woman, and now I'm into an Italian man, so it all checks out, you know?
Honestly, I think David Boreanaz was the guy that was out here influencing all our love lives, honestly.
Oh, 100%.
Okay, I will say I do like the choice to not have him doing Tai Chi in this episode because, you know, he's got stuff to work off here. He's not trying to repress. He's working through it right now.
He's angry.
And I feel like... Yeah, I feel like this body bag is perfectly representing that. So Angel is also angry at Doyle, understandably so. He's like, why did you not tell me about the powers that be? Why did you not tell me about the oracles, all this stuff? And then kind of goes in and actually, and I honestly forgot about this. He tells Doyle what happened the episode previously. And I really love how they blocked this. They had Angel specifically in his apartment, but they also have him move to the bedroom and sit on the bed when he says to Doyle, actually, she was here for a whole day and night. Because where Doyle is standing, where Angel is sitting, that's where they were when Doyle came in to tell Angel that I think it was the Moira demon was back and Angel had to get out of the bed. So it's like a visual reminder that that's where everything changed.
Right.
And that's where he was happiest, was right there with Buffy. Like those were his moments.
And I just want to say, I think it's, you know, Angel just kind of blurts out everything that happened. He doesn't even give Doyle a moment to like kind of register what he's saying. But Doyle accepts it and he believes Angel right away. And I just, I don't know, I guess for me, I've been listening to like the Prophecy Girls and they've been talking a lot about how the Scoobies often don't believe Buffy when she tells them that something has happened, whether it's a prophetic dream or a hunch that she has where she's usually
right. Or, hey, a guy tried to assault me and they're all like, stop whining, Buffy. Like,
And it just, I think it just shows like, there's just Doyle and Angel just have a very, like, close relationship, I think, where they kind of, it just shows that, like, Doyle respects Angel, the fact that he was very open to all of this, these things that he didn't remember that Angel's, like, telling him right now and not giving him even a chance to, like, wrap his mind around it. And he just kind of went along with it and he believed him. And I don't know, I think it just really goes well with, like, the end of the scene where he goes, you know, you'll fight evil and I'll keep score or whatever. Like, they truly are, like, partners, which is just another, like, stake in the heart because goddamn.
Yeah. Yeah. Doyle was a really, really good friend for Angel. And I think that they understood each other in a way that not a lot of people did, simply because of their heritage, for one, but also both of them fighting demons, both of them kind of in a way being half demon. I was looking for a quote. I can't find it, but in the book Slayers and Vampires, there was someone that was talking about, I think it might have been Tim Minear or David Greenwalt, where a complaint that they had heard from people and also like something the writers were a little bit worried about with Doyle and Angel was the fact that they were too similar. And that they kind of had a similar path and trajectory. And so in their mind, it was, I don't know how necessary it is to have both of these characters on the show when they are pretty much representing the same thing. And so it sucks because they were really great friends for each other. And I think Angel had someone that understood him, especially with Buffy not being there. And so taking Doyle away, I understand from a narrative perspective why it worked, but also like from like loving Angel so much from that perspective, you want him to have someone that he feels he can confide in. And I'm curious moving forward. I don't see that with him and Cordelia. So Doyle says, human, you are a real live flesh and blood human being and you and Buffy. So it all kind of sinks in for Doyle. And he says, you had the one thing you've wanted in your unnaturally long life and you gave it back. And the script says, Angel regards Doyle suddenly very vulnerable. Maybe I was wrong. Yes, yes, this is so human. Of course, Angel will be second guessing this because you know how have you ever like made a really good decision to like maybe break up from a toxic relationship or something? And then a couple days later, you're like, crap, maybe this wasn't a good idea because I'm so miserable and in so much pain. How could something that was such a good decision be so like hurtful and heartbreaking? Like it's easy to second guess when you're in the middle of it. Yeah. So I feel like this is so good. And I'm glad we had this conversation. It was needed.
For Angel, I don't think it's even the fact that he thinks it was a good decision to make or the right decision. It just, I think for him, it's like that was the only choice, whether he liked it or not, whether it was a good idea or not. It was the only choice that he could make. And I don't know, to think about like, it's like you said, it's very human to kind of for him to be like, did I make the right choice? Like, was the alternative even possible? And
yeah, maybe it would not have come to pass exactly like the Oracle said it would. Like maybe there was still other things I could have done. Yeah, no, for sure. So Doyle's like, I would have chosen the pleasure of the flesh over any duty and honor any day of the week. I just don't have that strength, which again, this is so good how they set this up. This is so important because I think people need to recognize that Doyle made that decision to die. One, because he truly is a hero because he was trying to save all those people. But ultimately, Doyle died so Angel could keep fighting for the world. Mm-hmm. This is Doyle recognizing the sacrifice that Angel made and realizing, wow, you really – this is what a hero looks like and this is what you are willing to do. And that inspires Doyle so much that he recognizes if Angel dies at the end of the episode, he cannot continue to help those people. And it's such a beautiful way for his story to end because – he was sent by the powers, the B, to help Angel. And that's what he does until his last breath. It's so good.
Yeah.
Angel, you'll never know your strength until you're tested. Doyle gives this really like empowering speech of, come on, you've lived and loved and lost and fought and vanquished inside a day. I really love how Glenn Quinn does that. Like he just nails that line. He says, I'm still trying to work up the nerve to ask Cordy out for dinner. And then kind of mentions that maybe he should tell her that he's half demon. They mention again, the soldiers of darkness, end of days, all that stuff. Angel says, I feel something coming, Doyle. And then Doyle says, it seems unfair. You got to save all the helpless types around here. Now you got to fight the apocalypse as well. And Angel says, it's all the same thing. You fight the good fight, whichever way you can, which again, like we're going to have a speech that everybody knows that Angel's probably most famous for that comes up later. But I love how we have echoes of that speech here
And we have little bits and pieces leading up to that point.
And this all goes back to the hilltop in Amends.
Yes, yes. Yes, it's always Buffy. Thanks, Buffy. So Doyle and Cordelia are having takeout coffee, talking, and Cordelia is upset. She says, Angel should have told us. We can't keep secrets from each other. And Doyle's like, no, we can't. So he starts to tell her, and then he gets a vision. Cordelia's like, did they look like they could maybe pay? I was like, girl. All right, so we see Raina, then Reef, and we have the Scourge, the big dozens of soldiers coming down. I have to say, until they do the reveal of the Scourge, they were pretty terrifying. Just like having those shadows along the wall, like the marching and stuff.
It's pretty scary. It's menacing.
It's funny because the script calls them jackbooted stormtroopers and just refers to them as stormtroopers for the rest of the script, which is hilarious.
A Star Wars reference. Mm-hmm. I love that.
All right, so then we're outside what's called the Brinks Hotel, and Doyle and Angel are following up on Doyle's vision. They come into this room. They find that the bunch of food is warm. Angel says something really interesting. Again, I always love the little undercurrents of, oh yeah, Angel's a vampire. Angel has Angelus inside of him that we see throughout this episode. He says, I smell something, and Doyle's like, okay, well, it's the food. And Angel's like, no, it's fear, not food. And I was like, I didn't know Angel can smell fear. That's really interesting. And again, okay, and Leia, you know, like we talked about earlier, a lot of Holocaust themes here, having them hiding under the carpet, under the floor. The way that the makeup is even done, the prosthetics is very gaunt looking. They're very terrified. Angel says, don't be afraid. We're here to help. Then we have a lot of exposition. The Elder Demon says that they're trying to get passage on a ship so they can go to Briol because they think they can find freedom there. And they're trying to get away from the Scourge. They see Angel and are immediately like, oh, he's the promised one. And they're like, we have a prophecy that says, actually, and as far as prophecies go, this one is actually pretty specific, which I was like, that's kind of nice. Because sometimes prophecies are like, in the end of days. And you're like, well, when's the end of days? Like, is that like... the Mayan calendar? Like, what is this? We don't know. He says the promised one will appear and save us from the Scourge. Doyle looks pretty stricken the entire time, like he knows something. And Angel notices as well. So he asks him what's going on. And Doyle says that Scourge is death. And then we get a flashback. I feel like this flashback, it could have been done slightly better because I didn't realize it was a flashback for the first few seconds that I was watching. Yeah, it wasn't till we got
true. Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't sure. I thought, oh, are we cutting to another day? Are we now like in Doyle's apartment? Like I wasn't like I've always been confused each time I watch this episode until we get to the part where it goes back to Doyle and Angel talking, because then I'm like, okay, this is a flashback. Yeah.
It almost feels like they should have started off with him like starting the story and then cut to the flashback.
I agree.
Because I agree. I was like, wait, weren't we just in the other house and now we're back in Doyle's house, but he looks different? What's happening?
Yes. They also changed the lighting slightly to make it more like, you know, when they do flashbacks, they kind of take the saturation out. But the problem was it's already in a very low light scene. So it's kind of not as apparent that the saturation is slightly different. So anyway,
right.
It is a flashback in case anyone is confused. Then we meet Lucas. So this is hilarious because this is Sean Gunn. And Sean Gunn actually appears later in this season as a completely different character. And he's most famous for playing Kirk in Gilmore Girls. And it cracks me up because they are just like two completely different characters. He also plays Kraglin in Guardians of the Galaxy. Did you know that, Megan? Did you know this was Kirk?
No, like now that you mention it, yes, I've made the connection, but like I never would have like put two and two together had you not said that. Yeah.
Here is somebody that can understand your references.
I know, this is great. I'm really loving having somebody that understands.
I have no idea what you're saying.
I know. Oh, that's true. I didn't even think about that. Okay, bye, Leia. Megan's my new co-host now. Every episode, I'm like, geez, Leia, I need somebody to like understand. And now I have Megan. So this is great. Megan's my friend now. Sorry, Leia. Yes, there he is.
Oh, that guy. Wait, yeah. Was he in Demon Face in this episode?
Yes, he's the guy with he's Lucas in this scene.
Lucas. Oh, he also comes back. Doyle's cousin.
In She. Yes.
I didn't realize my mic was off, but I was saying, this is him in Gilmore Girls. Yes.
Okay, yes, I remember him in She.
I also, for the longest time, so you guys know that song that's all over TikTok for a while. It's Sam Smith's Unholy. Mommy don't know daddy's gay.
I'm obsessed with that song.
Yes, everyone, you and the rest of the world. So for the longest time, I thought that Sam Smith was Sean Gunn because I think they kind of look alike. No! And then I was like...
Like, definitely the eyes, and yeah, okay, now I'm not going to be able to unsee it. Thanks for
it
that.
It looks like him, doesn't it? Yes.
You were like, Sean Gunn now has a successful singing career.
That's what I thought. I was like, wow.
It looks like a better fed version of Sean Gunn.
Yeah.
Like, he looks healthier.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I don't know if that's, like, wrong to say. But...
No, I'm just imagining Kirk singing better Unholy.
Oh, sorry. If I said he, I meant to say they. Sorry, Sam.
So Lucas is like, all right, I'm like kind of your relative, basically, because we're both from the same race. Doyle's like, I don't know you from Adam. Lucas is like, I'm Lucas. I'm a Bracken demon like you. My clan is from Oregon. A lot of us got killed off. We need help. The Scourge is coming for us. Doyle is like, I don't know who they are. And then we flash back to Angel and Doyle talking, and we kind of get a brief synopsis on who the Scourge is. They're an army of pure-blooded demons. They hate mixed heritage types, very into pedigree, so like a lot of Nazi references. So Doyle says, I punked out. I only just found out about my demon side. I didn't know what it meant. And the idea of sudden family obligations with guys who look like big, see, he's his big blue pincushions. You're green, dude. You're green. Was just a little too much to take right then. So then Doyle, we see, you know, he gets his first vision, and it's actually about all of those people being slaughtered. And this is hard.
Question. This was Doyle's first vision?
Yeah.
How did Doyle get the visions? Do we ever – I don't think we ever really find out. So nope. he just gets the visions? Like,
yeah. That's a really good question.
It's, like, obviously not a genetic thing because, like, if he's part of this, like, group of demons, they don't, like, all have these visions. So, like
– yeah.
I don't know. The powers that be, man, just throwing stuff out there with zero context sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the most we hear about where these visions come from is in City of, when Doyle and Angel are talking, and Doyle says, the powers of B has sent me. I've got things I need to atone for, that kind of thing. So somewhere along the line, could you imagine how like nerve-wracking that would be for Doyle? He's gotten these visions. Where do you go? Who, like, you just kind of have to start finding people that know, and it leads him to like what, the oracles? Like, that must have taken a lot of searching, honestly. Poor yeah. Doyle, man.
It's just very interesting that, like, we really don't know. I've never really thought about it because I guess I've never had to. But watching this episode and, like, seeing Doyle get his first vision, we never really find out, like, why he gets the visions.
My guess is it's eventually to lead him to Angel, and ultimately to lead him to the moment at the end of this episode where he sacrifices himself for Angel for the purpose that the powers that be want. Which I'm like, okay, I kind of want to have some words with these powers that be because they're really toying with people's lives and destinies here. And for what? We don't really know yet, you know?
Yeah.
So Doyle goes to investigate the vision, finds the rest of the Bracken demons. They have been slaughtered. The music is hauntingly beautiful.
It kind of made me think of, just like in relation to like the Holocaust references and everything throughout this episode, like that scene in Schindler's List where you hear that like achingly beautiful violin and you see the red and mixed in with the like black and white, and it's so just like, it like hits you. Like, emotionally, like, visually, and, like it's all of your senses kind of all at once, you know?
All right, so then a giant moving van pulls up. It's Cordelia. And this is interesting because I always forget that Cordelia is not as familiar with hanging out with demons as Doyle and Angel are. And she's very terrified of the demons until Doyle comes in and is like, hey, it's okay. They're fine. They're friends. And Cordelia goes, hey, you did notice that these folks are demons, right?
I feel like just, like, the way demons are viewed in, like, Buffy versus here, like, in Angel, it's, like, so different. Obviously because the title character is part demon, right? So I think that, like, lends to the fact that, like, it's from the, it's, she came from that, like, sort of, not this different universe, but Buffy almost seems like it is at some points, because demons are always bad, 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 bad. Whereas, like, in Angel, it's not necessarily the case. In fact, some of the best, most loved characters in this series are either part or full demon. So it's almost like maybe part of her, like, realization, I guess part of her growth, I don't know. But it's almost like, yeah, she came from Buffy where it was like, demons are bad, always. And then Angel, it's like not the same case, I don't know. But I didn't, yeah, the question itself was, like, very off-putting, certainly. Like, particularly with, like, obviously the theme of the entire episode.
So one of the criticisms that Critically Touched and Passion the Nerd had about the episode, one of the weaknesses, and I kind of agree, is the idea of the soul being tied to some form of humanity. That is something that the Buffyverse has talked extensively about in the lore since Giles brought it up in Welcome to the Hellmouth and The Harvest. So the lore has established that pure demons aren't capable of having a soul and that they no longer exist on this plane. That's something that Anya talked about in Graduation Day. So that means that these guys are not pure demons either. Like, there's no way that they could be. If they were pure demons, they would be in their pure demon form. Critically Touched says this: we learned in season 3 of Buffy that since the time of the demons on Earth's plane ended, no pure-blooded demon has existed in our dimensions, save for a very few rare oddities, and Mare Wilkins was one of these. Every demon on Earth has some part of them that is human, so they can physically exist in our dimension. This conflicts directly with the whole pure-blood idea of these demons, as even they are half-breeds in one way or another. So, I mean, it could be that the episode is intentionally doing this to kind of point out that, like, these guys are just being haters for no reason. Maybe they're more full-blooded than these guys. Because, like, if you could even say that, like, Nazi Germany saying that, oh my goodness, we're going to get rid of all Jews and all Black people and anybody who isn't, like, Aryan in their looks is inherently ridiculous because we're all human beings, right? So they could be pointing out that hypocrisy. But I feel like if the show was going to do that, that maybe they should have done a better job of hinting at that, because this, I think, just muddies the waters of the lore just a little bit. Doyle says, Cordelia oppressed demon people here, not getting any safer. Cordelia figures out that, like, this is really dire. And the script says, a beat as Cordelia takes in his more grave than usual look. Bad things are coming, aren't they? Doyle says, very bad things. And then it says, a beat. When all is said and done, Cordelia is a team player. And I do like this. I do like that while she is very self-centered and rude often, she does do what she needs to do when, like, she notices that, like, hey, this is a big deal, you know?
Yeah, and I think that all goes back to how she was on Buffy as well from the very beginning, where she was pulled into these situations unknowingly, but then chose to go back and help anyway. And I think that that's like a really great quality of Cordelia's that I don't think didn't get enough focus in Buffy in, let's say, season 3, for example, but it is consistent with her character. And I think it speaks to, like, her moral compass, that even though she's very self-centered and very rude at times, she still feels compelled to help. So I'm really interested to see, like, where that is going to go and evolve with her, because it's always, like, I feel like it's always been there. And I do really like that. I just wanted to give her a little shout out because I feel like I criticize Cordelia a lot, but
good there job, are like Leia. Really,
yeah, yeah. I mean, we're up 9 episodes in and, you know, I feel like I talk a lot of shit about her, but there are, like, really good aspects to Cordelia and things that, like, are really brave about her and really, like, great. And I'm excited to see, like, where it goes.
Wow, folks, this is actual character development for Leia here on the podcast, too.
Yeah.
Who would have thought 4 episodes ago that she'd be out here praising Cordelia? Just love to see it. Love to see the character growth. What a twist. Wow.
We love a good plot twist.
I mean, I'm still going to talk shit. I'm just saying.
Good.
There's like good stuff too.
Yes. You know? No, I appreciate how balanced you are with her, because I think that you are really good at criticizing the bad, but you're also really good at pulling out the good. So bravo, Leia. I aspire to be more like you. Okay, this scene. The cargo inspector is like, I can get a lot of trouble doing this. And Angel was really menacing in this scene. Like, he pulled out the big guns. Like, he's talking about, like, biting the guy, even though, like, I'm like, I don't know if he actually would, but the guy doesn't know that. I don't know. I thought it was kind of hot, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
The cargo inspector's like, so you're not going to pay? Angel's like, I'm not going to pay. And I was like, yeah, Angel, don't pay. Also, the music that they play again in this scene, the whole feel of this episode is very foreboding. You get this sense something big is going to go down. Like, you just know it. They're priming you the entire time. And it leads to this level of
dreadful
stress that you're just like, what's going to happen? You know?
It really just like, it puts like a knot in your stomach because you're like, oh my God, like, what is going to happen?
So back on the ship, the Elder is really upset. Reef ran, took off. Apparently he does this every time he'll come back. Reyna, the little girl that was with him earlier, says no. He says that there isn't any promise one. He says he's not going to stay. Doyle's like, all right, to the Elder, get everybody to the ship when Cordelia calls. I will try to be back here with Reef when I can. If not, I will meet you at the ship. So then we have this scene with Reef and Doyle. And this is a good scene. I think it's basically written to give Doyle the chance to kind of have a conversation with someone who is struggling a lot like he used to. I don't think he could have had this conversation with Cordelia or Angel. They needed to have it with somebody else who is kind of maybe 5 or 6 steps behind where Doyle is now. Doyle says, you're old enough. It's your choice whether to come with us or to stay. Reef says, I don't have a choice. Basically, I can go there or I can stay here. And either way, I'm going to be hated. It's not much of a choice. And I think this conversation is incredibly important, not just for Doyle's character development, but it's incredibly important because it's introducing and, well, not just introducing, but it's furthering the idea of good demons, and it's painting them in a much more sympathetic light than we've ever seen them before. And I think that's going to be huge moving forward, because I wouldn't be surprised if there's going to be times where Angel's Investigations is going to be actually helping out demons more. Like, this is the first time, like, mm-hmm. where their mission is to help actual demons. It's always been humans up until now. So, like, it's pivotal.
Right.
So Doyle's like, things are going to be different this time. And it's really interesting. So Reef says, why? Because your friend's the promised one. And the script says, Doyle doesn't jump on that with a quick yes. We see disappointment flicker across Reef's face. Behind the bluster, he was hoping it was true. And then Reef says, so you know it's not true. Doyle says, no, I don't. I don't know anything about your people's myths and legends, but I do know Angel, and he's the genuine article. Reef says, my hero. Doyle says, yes, that's exactly what he is. And if your people want to call him the promised one or the Dark Avenger, what does it matter? And he says, they put their faith in something, Reef. You don't have to if you don't want to. I mean, maybe Angel doesn't know what he's doing. It's possible. But the other option is losing yourself somewhere, hoping it all goes away. I know that never works, which I really never, it never hit me until this rewatch that Doyle was so inspired by Angel. Like, I knew that Doyle wanted to do the right thing at the end. And I always was like, wow, that's like really cool. Like, Doyle was always the hero that he meant to be. But I never really caught that he was doing all of this because of and for Angel. And I think that's really a beautiful way for them to honor his character.
Yeah. And this goes back to your comment earlier in the episode about how they were scared that Angel and Doyle were too similar, where it would just be like, why do we need two of the same character? But it's almost like the way that the both of them help each other, it's like they're holding up a mirror to each other and they're seeing the good in the other that, like, they can't see within themselves, but it's like the same, but it's just a reflection. So it's almost like, you know, without Doyle, Angel would have continued to, you know, help people, but isolate himself and, you know, not be connected to humanity because he just lost Buffy and she was his connection to humanity. And then Doyle would have continued to not kind of have an identity and be mm-hmm. this picture that they painted of him of, like, you know, a man that gambles and, like, gambles away all his money and drinks and does all of these things. And I feel like, yes, they're very similar in a lot of ways, but they bring out the best in each other because they're, like, holding up the best. Like, it's like a mirror, like I said before. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's really cool to see that. And it just makes, like, the loss of Doyle so much more impactful, because now you're just like, wow, like, what is Angel going to do now?
I think it's really cool. And I like something you just said triggered this, but I've always been like, oh man, I wish we could have seen. And there's another character that comes much later on in the show that I was like, oh, I wish he would have come earlier, because I think it would have been really cool to kind of see a reflection of Angel's journey when he first figured out that he has a soul, and to kind of see him wrestle with that. And I think that was supposed to be Doyle, honestly. And I'm seeing it for the first time. I think Doyle, the fact that he discovered he was a demon so late and so, like, so soon before this episode started, I think they were supposed to show Doyle. He was kind of supposed to be a representation of Angel, like, back when he first had a soul in that fight that he had. And so, yeah, like, Doyle in a way is kind of just 10 steps behind Angel, and we're kind of watching him watch Angel, and his path is a little bit easier, or is, until he died.
Doyle is like where Angel would have been if he hadn't met Buffy.
Yes, 100%. And I think it's really, like, I'm just now, I'm like, oh, and I'm kind of bummed too, because, like, if they'd kept Doyle, I think it would have been really fascinating. We would have seen a lot about Angel's past story through Doyle.
Yeah, they're like a good, like, not parallel, but, like, it's almost, like, nice to have those characters, like, next to each other so you can kind of see that. It's almost like, is Angel, like, Doyle's Buffy? I don't know.
Yes, I could see it.
Yeah.
Totally. Yes, absolutely. I love that.
And now I'm picturing David Boreanaz with long blonde hair, but
I like that. Angel is Doyle's Buffy, definitely.
So Reef and Doyle are moving through the streets, and we hear the Scourge coming. And really fun fact, so IMDb was talking about how, like, they all, like, are supposed to be marching in sync. And it says, it takes a surprisingly long time to teach a group of civilians to march in step. Time you don't have for nameless extras on a TV show. So when the Scourge troops are marching down the street, you'll notice that they don't really keep the camera on them for very long, or else you'll notice that they're not marching in sync, because there's a reason why military does drills, because apparently that's, like, really, really hard to do. So little details like that I, like, never would have even thought about. But now that I, like, watched the episode, I'm like, oh, I guess you never really do see them up close marching. So
it's always just their
shadows.
That's
my list of things that I didn't notice the first million times I watched it. You've made me such a list with this, honestly.
All right, so Doyle and Reef hide as the soldiers move past them. The streets are super, super empty. So I, like, want to know where specifically this is in downtown LA. Like, where all the people left. I wonder if this is, like, an abandoned section or something. Like, does nobody hear these, like, massive
demons? Maybe it's just
demons?
Like a movie studio.
That's it. I think you cracked it. That's what it is.
Maybe they're just running through movie set.
I just can't imagine, like, a massive amount of demons moving through the streets and no one hears them. So it is a little weird.
Yeah, it's kind of like in the harsh light of day when Buffy and Spike are fighting outside in, like,
and suddenly
the college,
no one's there,
and suddenly, like, not a single soul is out there. It's the middle of the day.
It's between classes.
Where are all the people? Nobody goes to class in Sunnydale.
I don't know if anybody
Except
went to
for
class
Riley.
At our university either.
Except
honestly,
for Riley.
So.
Yeah, honestly.
It's just Riley and Maggie Walsh.
Yeah, only Riley and Maggie Walsh. That's it. And Willow. Willow goes to
and
class.
Willow, that's
of
right.
Course.
Yeah. So Doyle tells Reef to hang tight. He takes off and basically uses himself as bait until Angel snatches him. And Angel seems like he has this plan, but we're not privy to this plan until we see the stormtrooper guys barge in, go searching. They find that all of the demons are missing and gone, and an Angel pops in. And it's been so long since I've seen this episode. I was kind of surprised to see Angel in his vamp face. Like, it's been a couple episodes since we've seen him like this, but it also really reminded me of School Hard when Angel was using Xander as bait when he was confronting Spike.
And the way he was acting like he was evil. like he was unjealous. I found it was like a lot more believable the way he was acting in this episode than it was in School Hard.
I think they did a really good job. I mean, for someone who was watching the episode for the first time, it would be really easy to be like, oh, wait a minute. Is Angel bad? Is Angel evil? Because I kind of felt like they were kind of trying to show that in this moment. And I love, like we've talked about before, throughout all these episodes, there's tiny, tiny little hints that they like to throw in of Angel's angelic side. And this is another one of those. It's not too far from the surface, especially because of Doyle.
It's also another hint at Angel's acting, successful acting career.
That's right.
Because he's literally the best actor on this show.
Yeah, he said world's best actor. And then, you know, he has that card from that agent.
Come on, give this man an Emmy. Like, not only did he fool that doctor and Faith, and now these people, like, he's just, oh, yeah.
He fools, like, he fools Demon Hitler in this episode, too. He's so just like, that should go for something.
Is that something you ever thought you'd say in your life, too? Demon Hitler.
Oh, demon no. Hitler. I mean, yeah, like, I guess that's an oxymoron, huh?
Isn't he a demon, or wasn't he actually a demon?
Sounds like a movie concept, I feel like.
Someone decides to make a Halloween horror movie and call it Demon Hitler. It's like, what is it, Tornado Sharks or Shark Tornado or whatever those like, movies they make? Sharknado, that's what it is.
I like Shark Tornado better, or Tornado Sharks. I like the
I'm actually activity. Ashamed to say that I have seen Sharknado. I think
I also have seen Sharknado. Oh, I've also seen God. It. Don't worry about it.
I'm far too cultured to watch that.
Don't ever okay. watch that Wait. Movie, please. I don't know why or where.
What would we get if we combined Demon Hitler? Would it be Ditler?
Ditler.
Instead of Sharknado, call it Ditler.
Ooh, I don't...
That sounds really bad. Never mind.
It leaves an impression, to say the least.
Hitman? Oh. Not
Isn't
Hitman.
That like a movie already? Hitman? I think it's a movie already. But I think it's a Guy Ritchie
it's
movie.
It's Hitmon. Hitmon.
Sounds like very demon, German.
But Hitmon.
I think Hitmon sounds like he's suddenly like reggae Hitler, like Hitmon. I don't.
Oh my god.
This is a train wreck.
It's just like count. I don't know. We're really spiraling here, you guys.
it's so late, man. Ooh, this is what happens when we record late at night. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's just say that I would never make it as a film producer or a writer in Hollywood.
Whew. Angel would, though.
Angel definitely would. So back to Angel. Angel holds up Doyle. He talks about how he wouldn't eat Doyle. He says he reeks of humanity. And then we find out from Trask, the demon that he's talking to, he says, you're one to talk vampire. Yours is the lowest of all the half-breeds, which was really interesting to me because I was like, okay, if he's the lowest of all half-breeds, like it's interesting. Okay. So again, nitpicking on the things I don't like about this episode, I think it's very far-fetched. They'd be like, yeah, we believe you. Okay. Here's a uniform. Great. Now you can see our most valuable weapon. Like it just feels a little ham-fisted to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that makes sense. Or maybe they know that he's like they know of the great Angelus, and they're like, "Yeah, we want this guy on our team because he likes to party."
So Angelus or Angel snaps Doyle's neck, which I feel like was effectively shocking, and I think mm-hmm. that really kind of like puts the viewer on edge. But it also makes for like if you had a suspicion or if somebody had spoiled the episode for you and said, "Hey, Doyle's gonna die," I feel like this would have been like, "Oh, okay." Doyle died. Wow, we
That's
can like, really
point.
Mourn it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it felt like if there was any spoilers that got out, people would have been like, oh, okay. Oh, wait, no, he's actually alive. He didn't actually die. And then when he actually does die at the end, I don't know. It was kind of cruel, but you know, it did what it needed to do. So Angel takes off with Trask. I feel like the episode really like hones in on poor Doyle. The music kind of like swells. You're like, wow, is he like dead? What is going on? Then Reef comes out of his hiding place, comes in, finds Doyle. Doyle wakes up, is like, oh, I think I hated that plan, snaps his neck back into place and says, yeah, I'm just stronger in demon form. So basically, like, I guess I can't be killed by my neck snapping. I was like, that's news to me. Does that work for Angel too? Like, does it work for demons?
Yeah, I was just going to ask, vampires? Does that Well, I feel like it would work for vampires because the only way they can be killed is through a stake through the heart, sunlight.
Or beheading.
But I guess also like beheading. But it's not technically beheading. They're just like breaking bones. So I feel like they would.
You know what show really like takes advantage of this little loophole is Vampire Diaries.
They the have Vampire
people
Diaries.
People's necks constantly. God.
All the time.
They also kill everybody and then bring them back like 3 minutes later. It's so stupid.
Yeah. There's like no actual like
ramifications for anything.
Yeah, I feel like I'm going to get hate if I say that, but yeah.
No, it's okay.
There really isn't. When somebody dies, you're just like, oh, they're just going to be back in the next few episodes. It's fine.
We cut to the ship as Cordy's trying to get everyone in. And then the elder of the demons comes up and says, we can't thank you and your friends enough. I'm sure Reef is in safe hands, yada, yada. And then he kind of lets it slip, just like a little small little thing. Doyle is one of the good ones. He understands our suffering. And Cordelia's like, we both do. Not understanding that Doyle is a demon. Okay.
Yeah. Cordelia doesn't, you don't get it, honey, but that's okay. It's the thought that counts, kind of.
Like, the elder's like, oh, I apologize. I didn't mean to say that you didn't. I felt bad that he had to apologize for her not understanding. But it was like a really interesting moment that I was like, for someone who has no clue about the privilege that they have, they just, in their mind, they're like, yeah, I can empathize. I can relate with you in this moment. And yet, absolutely, like, not even. You know?
Right. Yeah, right. It sounds like me at work when somebody says, like, when somebody is complaining about something and I just have to be like, oh, I understand. But, like, really, I, like, don't care.
Yeah, really, you just want to go to your next cup of coffee and take a nap. Yeah.
Exactly.
So the captain lets it slip that Doyle is half demon. In the script, Cordelia actually doesn't say anything. It says her face is frozen and she's unable to come up with anything. But obviously in the episode, she's like, what? So then we have Angel standing amongst the crowd of the Scourge, listening to Tiernan, is apparently their leader's name, pulls out his giant, Passion the Nerd calls it, lantern, says, we're going to get rid of, he's like, all right, we're going to get rid of everyone with the power of the beacon that has even a drop of human blood inside of them. He's like, within a, was it like 3-block radius? I was like, okay. I was expecting something that was going to be like the entire Earth. And it was like the 3-block radius.
Yeah, just so it was kind of funny. They just have to keep moving it to like kill more people. Like, okay, guys, now the next 3 blocks. Let's go.
It's like not super efficient.
No.
Not at all. They have to like charge it and they're like, all right, hold. Okay, now to the next block.
What a stupid idea.
Imagine first someone forgets to just like plug it in the night before a giant raid. I'm so mad. Guys, like my alarm didn't go off. I forgot to plug my phone into the charger. Like, same vibe. I don't know.
Darn it, Trask. You forgot to plug in the beacon.
Who?
The guy's name was Trask. They called him Trask in the script.
Sarah, how do you know all of these people's names? First Trevor, now these guys. Like, what is happening?
Okay, don't come for me. Tabby and Leah already bully me. The fact I know all of the side characters and demons' names in Unbecoming Buffy. I'm just reading the script. It says Trask. That's his name. Trask forgets to plug in the beacon.
It's just funny because, like, they'll put the names of the demons in the script, but they will not mention it in the actual episode, not even once.
All right, so then they bring out the first mate. They're like, he has betrayed his people. He will tell us where they go. Would anyone like to see an experiment with the giant beacon? Kills him. Everyone goes, hurrah, let's go. And then they take off towards the ship.
They don't just kill him. They eviscerate him. He burns up like a vampire and crumbles.
Okay, sorry. My apologies. Scary. Yes, it is a picture of what is going to happen to Doyle later, but I choose to not dwell on it. Thank you, Leah.
I just thought like our listeners should have like the visual, you know?
Yeah, thanks for a reminder of that.
We're back in the sewer systems. Angel sneaks up to a motorcycle. I have to say, this is the best part of the episode right here. Angel in leather pants. His hair's not great, but he's on a motorcycle. It would have been awesome if he had his leather jacket flowing majestically behind him, but it doesn't.
Yes.
So we'll take what we can get.
I kind of like the hair. That's probably just me.
I think it is just you. Megan, do you like Angel's hair in this episode?
Of course I do, obviously. I mean.
Oh, okay.
I have no
You're
idea.
You're alone actually. Here, Sarah.
Yeah, I don't.
Is it just because it's David Boreanaz? Would you like that kind of look on anybody else? Or is it just because it's
absolutely
him?
Not just him.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I can take that. That's fine. All right, so back on the cargo ship, Cordelia is pacing. The captain's like, I can't find my first mate. He's missing. Doyle and Reef jump on, and then Cordelia and Doyle have this exchange. Okay, so I think it is really, really sweet. I actually really liked the chemistry between Cordelia and Doyle in this moment. I felt like this is one of those few moments where Cordelia is being like super sincere. I think she was mm-hmm. really worried for Doyle. I really like that she's like, I mean to you all the time. Like what would change me finding out that you're a demon? I do think that I understand completely why Doyle was afraid to tell her though, because yes. earlier on in the episode, she was showing a huge prejudice against demon folk. So I felt like
this is also not the first time that Cordelia has kind of shown her very black and white view of the world, where like demon evil, human good. But I guess this is just to show us that there's like more layers to her and that she actually cares about Doyle, which I also really like enjoyed the scene.
I don't know. I feel like Charisma Carpenter's acting in this episode, I just felt like it was taken up a notch. And I don't know if that's because it was Glenn Quinn's last time or not. But like one of our common, like, or at least I should say my, I shouldn't lump you guys in. But one of my criticisms with her is I feel like sometimes Charisma really struggles with the really big emotions. And in this episode, it was just fantastic. I feel like she hit every beat and I really felt the emotion from her. So Cordelia's like, is there anything else I should know? Doyle's like, no, the half demon thing is pretty much my big secret. Cordelia's like, good, that's out. It's done. Would you ask me out for dinner already?
Aww.
And Doyle looks so happy. It's so sweet.
It is really sweet. And then
I'm immediately like, oh no, what's going to happen?
Seriously.
We can never
and I just want to say, this rewatch, and I was saying this to you, but this rewatch, I wasn't really feeling Cordelia and Doyle. I don't know. I just wasn't really like into it. It was fine, the build up and like him chasing after her and stuff like that. But I just didn't, I don't know. It was nothing that ever I went to the next episode being like, oh, I want to see more of them. But I really, really, really liked the scene. Like, this is probably mm-hmm. the only scene where I was like, yeah, I like this. This is mm-hmm. a great dynamic for
her. It seems more and possible him. From this, right? Like, from that scene.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I agree with you.
And yeah. I just feel like they work really, like, well together in this scene, which I liked. Whereas before, it just felt like he was – it was just like a rehash of, like, Xander and Cordelia over and over again. Or – you know, like Xander and like Buffy, where he's like chasing after her and she's rejecting him over and over again. And I'm just like, oh, this is kind of whatever. But I'm not like a shipper or anything, but I like it in this moment. And had he lived, I'm sure it would have been great. They could have gone out for dinner.
The Buffyverse knows how to really pull on our heartstrings with like woulda, shoulda, coulda. And I mm-hmm. think that's part of why we really love it. I mean, I know not to like throw out Vampire Diaries and the CW again, but something like sometimes I feel like with those shows, there's so much of fan service to the mm-hmm. point where there's no more stakes, where they give us everything that we want, but then we're like, oh, okay, well then there's no, like, it's not realistic at this point where it's like so much candy, you're like craving something of substance after a while. It's probably a bad analogy, but you know what I mean? Like you have everything that you want, but there's nothing left to like yearn for, you know?
Right. But it's so true because I was never invested in any, like personally invested in any of the relationships on the Vampire Diaries, like at all. It was just kind of like, oh, this is happening now, so that's good. I think the only relationship I was ever kind of like sad about was Bonnie and Enzo, and that's because
I was gonna say, me too.
She just literally never same. Caught literally a break same. And like they just were so perfect together. And then the way he died, and I was just, I think that was the only time where I was like, oh my God, no, I'm so sad. But every other relationship, I was just like, like, it's fine, yeah. I guess. Not to be shady or whatever, but Vampire Diaries was basically Buffy 2.0, but like,
oh, 100%.
Like, yeah. They were trying to be different, but also like, exact same storylines, exact same scenes.
I was thinking that about True Blood the other day too.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's all kind of like the same sort
well,
of.
Well, it really,
it really was Buffy and Angel that started the huge vampire werewolf craze that happened in the early 2000s mm-hmm. because it was so successful and because Buffy and Angel's chemistry was so freaking inspirational and palpable that people wanted to recreate it. And honestly, I don't think it's ever been created in vampire lore and mythology on television since. Not even Edward and Bella. I'm so sorry for you Twilight fans out there.
Oh, God. Yeah, but to compare Buffy and Angel to Edward and Bella is like so – it's they're not comparable. They're not comparable in like any way because, first of all, Bella and Buffy are nothing alike. Like, don't even put Buffy in the same league as Bella. Come on.
Bella has no autonomy whatsoever.
Exactly. And Edward and Angel are nothing alike either. Like, put some respect on my man Angel's name.
Side note, though, okay, I actually just found out that Stephanie Meyer, who wrote Twilight, based Edward on Henry Cavill.
Oh.
That's who she was thinking when she wrote about Edward.
I might have liked him more if Henry Cavill played the character, because I kind of want to smack what's-his-face in
Robert
the face.
Pattinson, you know what? When I read the books, like, back when they came out, obviously, like, they were for, like, that age that I was at.
They were all the rage in high school.
Yeah, I was, like, obsessed with them. And now, like, reading them back, it's, like, not great, it's but so it's very, like, it does its job, right? Like, that's what the intention is. But I actually thought Robert Pattinson was, like, a decent fit for, like, based off of what I kind of pictured, so when I read that, I was like, obviously, I love Henry Cavill, but like, in that role, I don't think I would have
looked too old to be
in that
role.
Is like too emo. It's too emo for Henry Cavill. Like, if that makes sense, he's like a lanky, skinny British boy.
That's so true. Yeah, he was definitely not lanky.
I think she had based it off of a specific role that Henry Cavill was in at the time when he was younger, but I don't remember which one it was. But yeah, I was kind of like blown away and also cracking up because I feel like he's like typecast for every fantasy series movie ever, which just is hilarious that that's who she was thinking of. But yeah, anyway, okay, well, we got so far off the beaten track. Back to Hero. Well, I think we talked about Vampire Diaries for seven minutes straight. That's hilarious.
Honestly.
Whatever. Who cares? Who cares?
We just love vampires, apparently. Spice.
Fuck that show, though.
So then Doyle is about to ask Cordelia out when they hear the motorcycle. Angel pops up, sees the captain, is like, we have to go now. Captain's like, okay, I find my first mate, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, the Scourge shows up. We got their trucks and their motorcycles. Angel tells everyone to get down below. The Lister demons are all sitting amongst the wooden crates and containers. And as they go down, Doyle is trying to like get everybody into order. Angel's up on the deck and Trask is like, you lied to us. It's like, shocker. He just joined you like 15 minutes ago and you're like surprised about this? Okay, Trask. Okay. Go take your lantern somewhere else. Anyway. So then they start fighting. Angel gets tossed into the hold. And as they're doing this, they're lifting the lantern up over into the hold area where all the Lister demons are. The beacon, it says the beacon's indicator continues to rise. Everything's getting really intense. Angel's like, it's going to detonate. So then he's like, okay, now everybody needs to get out of the boat now. And everyone's like, what are we doing? What do you want from us? Doyle is trying to help bring out refugees. And then they realize that the doors are locked. They cannot get out. They are trapped. And the beacon is continuing to load and get, I guess, I don't know, what would you call it? Beacons. Yeah, like load. It's buffering. The beacon is buffering.
Oh, no.
So then Angel snaps Trask's neck, which apparently it kills Trask's demon
side. But not Doyle.
He's the lesser demon now, Trask.
Ooh. Burn. Ooh.
Enter John Cena theme song.
So Angel moves to the edge of the platform. The beacon's growing stronger. Doyle and Cordelia join him. Doyle's like, well, what does that do? And Angel's like, it kills anything with human blood. And they're like, well, shoot, that's literally everyone here except for, I guess it's even Angel too. Would it kill Angel? Yeah, it would kill all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. which I guess is really, really important because, again, Doyle is sacrificing himself, obviously for everyone, but also so that Angel can continue his mission. So Doyle says, it's fully armed, isn't it? Angel says, almost. I pull the cables. I think I can still shut it off. And Doyle says, yeah, but how are you going to get to it without touching the light? And Angel, it says, Angel's look says he's not. All of them aware of Angel's imminent sacrifice. Cordelia says, Angel, it's suicide. Doyle says, no, man, there's got to be another way. Angel looks down. You can see all the Lister demons look absolutely terrified. They're looking up at them like, we trust you. We trust that you're going to get us out of here. And Angel looks at them and says, it's all right. My goodness. What hits me every time is Angel is 100% fully prepared to sacrifice himself in this moment. Like, he's like, okay, this is what I'm meant to do. This is it. This is the thing that the powers that be told me that I was going to have to, this is why I'm here. Cordelia tries to stop him. And Doyle goes over to Angel. The script says, they smile at each other, comrades. And Doyle says, the good fight, yeah? And Angel claps his hand on Doyle's neck and starts to go towards the bomb. And Doyle says, you'll never know till you're tested. I get that now. Then he punches Angel. And this is like a good punch. I mean, like, we have seen Doyle trying so hard this entire time.
The platform.
Knocks him off. Cordelia is back there like, what is happening? And he turns to her, and the script says, Doyle turns to the stunned Cordelia, marches right up and kisses her, a full, strong, mind-blowing kiss. A faint blue glow emanates from between their lips. Cordy's eyes go wide. This is no ordinary kiss. And Angel's like, no, Doyle. He's down at the bottom and on the platform. Doyle says, too bad, we'll never know. Gonna cry. And he says, if this is a face you could learn to love. Oh, my gosh. Like,
my God.
Rip my heart out.
Angel's like, no. He jumps, grabs. And this scene, I feel like they just went the extra mile to show how excruciating this. I mean, it's hard enough that we have to see Doyle die, but I feel like it wasn't like a quick and painless death. Like, this was excruciating for him. And to his credit, he doesn't give up. He doesn't jump back off after it doesn't work. He keeps trying, even as you can see the literal flesh like melting off of his bones. Sorry, everyone, but that's kind of what happens. The script says that a supernatural charge flows out of the beacon, crawling its way up to Doyle's arm. He screams as it reaches his head and torso, consuming him, melting flesh away. Still, he holds the cables in his grasp. In IMDb, it talks about how the special effects supervisor, Lonnie Peristere, explained that David Greenwalt described his vision of Doyle's death as, I want him to melt to death. I want his flesh to melt off and muscle and then bones. Peristere was concerned that the effect would be too graphic for television. He shot Doyle in his demon form and Doyle with half-burned makeup on, then used matte elements to digitally chew through his skin, including an element of acetone poured on styrofoam. So he did three different, he had makeup, he had the visual effects, and then he had actual like physical effects of acetone on styrofoam, and then layered it all over each other. And that's how you get that effect that looks so realistic. And like, it's well done, but it's just honestly kind of hard to watch. It's not done in a way that's supposed to be like gratuitous. It's not like they're like, oh, let's make this like super gory and bloody. Like, they're doing it intentionally to show the pain of sacrifice. That's the theme of this show. And so Doyle is unfortunately the physical representation of what Angel has to go through in a very like an emotional level, and also what Angel is willing and to sacrifice himself to actually do on a daily basis. And so I think it hits really hard for all those reasons. And when it goes back, like, you can actually hear Charisma Carpenter like sobbing. And I'm fairly certain like she's actually sobbing. It was pretty crazy.
I believe that.
And then it just, the beautiful transition right away to Doyle's voice. If you need help, then look no further. We're in Angel's office and they're watching Doyle on the screen. He says, Angel Investigations is the best. Our rats are low. Come over to our offices. You'll see there's still heroes in this world. Is that it? Are we done? And I just, what beautiful symmetry, because you heard it at the beginning of the episode and you take it one way. It's him being uncomfortable with being in the spotlight. He's not comfortable with being the hero.
This was Doyle's, like, I will remember you almost. It's like, Doyle didn't think that he had the strength to do this because he didn't see himself as a hero and he didn't think that he was worthy. And, you know, I think the way that they were showing us the flashbacks to when he, you know, didn't help his cousin the first time to this time, it's like he righted a wrong that had been like weighing on his soul for so long. And then he made like the ultimate sacrifice that he didn't think he had the strength to make, just like he said to Angel in the beginning of the episode. So it's just like, that's what I mean when I say that this episode is like really tight. I feel like for me, it's because it really does come full circle. And I feel like from the start to the finish, like we just get everything. Like everything is just there and it's done so beautifully. And it's truly like an episode that's just about Doyle's journey. And I don't know. I really love it.
I feel like one of the criticisms I've seen of this episode is that they felt like the emotional impact of it would have been better reserved for an end of a season arc, or that it was built up to be too much for it to be mid-season, or that Doyle's death was such a big thing to just be in a random episode. And I actually cannot disagree more. I think the impact of this episode is that it is supposedly just another random episode. It's not an end of the season thing. And I think that's to show that you, like any of them could die at any point. Mm-hmm. The stakes are always high. It isn't always against the big bad. It's against something as stupid as a beacon that only spreads, you know, 2 blocks or whatever, 2 miles or whatever it was. And so I think that the fact that this episode hits as hard as it does, and we're only on episode 9, I think that's actually really, really cool.
I think that like also with it being right in the middle, we have so much storytelling to get out of this storyline now that it's happened. Like, what's going to happen next with Angel and Cordelia? Like, what's the next is what, like, we look forward to. Whereas I feel like if it was a season ender, like, I just find that with the Buffyverse and all of that, I just find that when something happens at the end of the season, it's not really addressed that thoroughly in the following season because they're so quick to jump into the next thing, right? So I feel like if this was a season ender, like it almost would have just been, you know, oh, skip to 4 months after Doyle's death and here's where our heroes are now, but now we get to see them like the week after or the day after, and it's like it's interesting to like see how they deal with the fallout afterwards. So I like that it's episode 9 because it really just raises the stakes for the rest of the season.
And I think the Buffyverse does actually do a really good job of at the end of the season, like that's what we talk about, like the first 6 episodes of the season are usually like addressing that stuff. But I think what you're trying to say, Leia, is we want to see like immediately after. We want to see the next day. We want to see the nitty-gritty people like in pain wrestling through this, not 4 months from now being like, wow, okay, that was really hard, but the hardest part is over us. We can still kind of address it, but at least we can move forward now.
Right.
And no, we want to see what happens the next day.
Yeah. I think what I mean when I say like it doesn't address it, it's like they spend an episode or two kind of dealing with the stuff that happened last season, but then they quickly start jumping into the next stuff, the next like arc of the next season. It's still kind of like they still kind of like maintain it. Like I'm thinking specifically of like Buffy season 3 coming off of becoming part 2, where it's like, yes, it's dealt with a little bit. It's dealt with in the first few episodes, but then they quickly jump into like Faith right away.
Yes.
You know, it's like, okay, let's get into the next thing. Whereas a death in the middle of a season, like you're still in the thick of it. And like you said, and I said, like, you're going to see what happens the day or the week after this occurred. It's not going to be a time jump of 4 months later where it's like the characters have like already dealt with the worst of their grief. This is going to be like, we're in the thick of the grief, which is like, I think it does the death justice, I think is the right, I don't know if that's the right word to use.
It services the death.
Like it doesn't, he didn't die in vain and he didn't die just to be forgotten a few, you know, next season.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think in a show like this that is focusing on the day-to-day, that's focusing on what it means to live life, like just living the next day. We've heard Angel talk about that so many times. Like it's just do the next thing. I think having to deal with the ramifications of Doyle's
Doyle's death in real time mm-hmm. makes it so much more impactful for both the viewer and the show as a whole.
And it makes I Will Remember You, like, I just feel like these last two episodes have taken so much away from Angel that it's like, oh my God, like, what is going to happen next? Because it's like, his humanity got taken away. He gave that up. He gave Buffy up again. And now his best friend also got taken away from him and his connection to the powers that be. So it's like, what's next? Like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
And we already know Angel's like suicidal half the time. So, right. So it's like, yeah. Like what?
Yeah. Now he just has Cordelia. Like his best friend got taken away from him. You know, I don't know how close him and Cordelia really are at this point. And I know this will push them closer together as well. So mm-hmm. yeah, this episode was the one that was like, oh, it got me to sit up and take notice and kind of pulled me into the show a little bit more. There's one more episode that's coming up later on that I was like, that was when I was like, I was hooked. But this one, it really, if you're not invested in the show yet, this is the one that really makes you go, there's something different about this one.
Definitely.
So, and I guess we'll have to wait till next time to find out what it is.
Ooh. I'm excited for the next episode.
I know. I'm so excited. Does it sound really bad to say, like, from here on out, like, there's a couple of, like, stinkers, but I'm so excited for where the series goes and, like, the characters that are going to come in and the story. Like, oh, I just can't wait to talk about it.
Can't wait to hear you guys talk about it. Very excited.
Well, you'll have to come back, Megan. You have to come back sometime. Pick an episode.
Yeah, that's a nice invitation. I'll take it. I'm still reeling from the emotional damage of this one. Give me like
I know, a couple minutes. Damage. You know what I mean? But thanks so much for joining us, Megan. This was an absolute blast. I love your insights. And thank you, viewers, for listening. Just a reminder, next week we normally would have Becoming Buffy episode playing, but next week will be our Thanksgiving, American Thanksgiving for all you Canadians. So there will be no podcast next week. And then the week after that, we'll resume with Becoming Buffy. So it's actually going to be 3 weeks until our next episode. Unfortunately, I know. I'm so sorry. But I have to bake a turkey, so... What are you going to do? Can't bake a turkey and do a podcast at the same time. I wish I was Superwoman, but I'm just not, man.
I baked a turkey once and had a meltdown. So
did you really?
Oh my God. Yeah, it was terrible.
Either way, wish me luck, you guys. And we will see you on December 8th for Parting Gifts.
Thanks so much for listening to Investigating Angel. If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to follow, subscribe, and review us on all platforms. You can also find us on Instagram at Investigating Angel Podcast, and you can email us at investigatingangelpodcast@gmail.com.